everyone. Thanks for tuning into the podcast. I'm Brian Beeler. Today I've got a group out of Cleveland, as much as it pains me to bring them in. As a Cincinnatian, we often have a problem with that Northeast Coast, but they're here. I've got Andrew Spurk with Clockwork Nine, a creative agency up north, and we want to talk a little bit about the challenges that creative pros face and how an organization takes that data and manages it internally from the workstation to the data center. And so Andrew's got a good perspective on that. Andrew, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Brian. Been looking forward to this. And Cleveland is a great city. I just want to say that.
There's no doubt. You know, I think there's the built-in animosity. And it's even worse right now because the Bengals are such garbage and Cleveland's on the upswing on the football program.
And can't really argue with that.
No, and I hate to admit it, but I root for them at this point because as you know, possibly as a Browns fan, after seeing them be so bad for so long, watching someone else emerge from the ashes of craptitude is somewhat rewarding.
Well, I mean, I don't follow the Browns as much as I probably should, but all the guys here are huge Browns fans, and Stevie, our account director, actually has a Browns podcast, if you can believe that.
Oh my gosh.
He's a huge Browns fan, just massive.
He must not be that smart, but otherwise, that's okay. Thanks. No, Cleveland's great. Actually, you guys, you're not far from the coast. I was looking at the map. Are you guys right kind of nestled up next to Burke, or where are you geographically?
Yeah, I can actually see Burke from our window right here. We're right off the highway. So,
yeah, it's a fun area, actually. Flew up there to take an in-law to Cleveland Clinic last summer, and we used to have a little shuttle service that ran from the local airport here right to Burke. Perfect, hop in the car and head out west or southwest or whatever it is to get to Cleveland Clinic from there. That was my first ever bird strike. We were coming in to land, and we didn't know it at the time, but the pilot hopped out, and he was looking at the nose cone where it was squashed in a little bit. And he said, it's funny, they actually had to halt all the traffic to the airport to go find out what kind of bird it was that we had hit on the way in. I don't know the significance of the type of bird, but nonetheless, we sorted it out and the airplane was okay.
Yeah, I hear that. That's last time I heard about that was, what's his name?
Miracle. Yeah, Sullenberger. Thankfully we were able to put it down. Although I think it matters if, you know, since you're landing, we were already on approach versus taking off when he ran into those geese. All right. So I said a creative agency. I may have undersold you a little bit. Tell us a little bit more about Clockwork Nine and what you guys have going on up there.
Sure. No, I mean, creative agency is pretty accurate. We do, so we actually started about 5 years ago as a bunch of freelancers that did, you know, video photography separately, just working in Northeast Ohio. And we decided to start a company just because we were so enamored with the way we like to do things. And yeah, 5 years later, we expanded into a creative agency that specializes in video and photography and really kind of anything that moves. When it comes down to it, it's just animation, 3D. And our clients range from, you know, small businesses in this area to Fortune 500, Fortune 100 companies, just all over the map. We do everything. We do this one project. You know, you mentioned the Browns. It's not on our website because we're still waiting for the case study to get approved. But we did this project for this agency called Martin Agency, which is based out of Virginia, if I'm not getting that wrong, Richmond, Virginia. Mm-hmm. And they represent Geico, DoorDash, Buffalo Wild Wings. And they contacted us about doing video. And then it sort of, you know, snowballed into this. They wanted to do these mini dog pounds.
All right. So for people that aren't Browns fans, what the heck's a dog pound?
The dog pound is actually this part of the Browns stadium that is like the hardcore fans, you know, the guys that really, really just, you know, they're the Browns fans. When you talk about Cleveland Browns fans, they're the Browns fans. And so they have their own dedicated section in the end zone. And so they wanted to recreate that experience inside Buffalo Wild Wings restaurants. So we actually designed and built these mini dog pounds complete with, you know, we had the actual graphic from the front of the dog pound, which is, you know, we got this Illustrator file, which is a 70-yard long graphic that they use in the stadium. And we sort of chopped it up and got it right to fit. So we built these 10-foot long, four-seater little mini dog pounds.
Now, can you so is it just like the regular dog pound where you can throw D-cell batteries at passersby, or is that
you could not encouraged? I think you could, but the yeah, that's up to Buffalo Wild Wings management, really, at that point.
But they've been yeah, they get a little rough in the actual dog pound. Hopefully, they tone it down a little bit in the wing shop.
Yeah, it was a very important part for us to make sure they were structurally sound. I mean, they were they're beautiful, and we actually, you know, put like real padding behind the graphic so you could smack it, because that's a big thing. And they're solid. Gravy. They're solid, man.
I can't imagine what that place looks like at 12:30 on a Sunday afternoon.
I know. But yeah, so I mean, we do all sorts of projects. I mean, it's a fun job. I'm fortunate to have it, and you know, my position here is managing director, so it's pretty much just overseeing everything. And then I'm the basically the lead creative director. So we're a small company, but everybody here has tons of ideas all the time. I mean, we're an idea powerhouse when it comes down to it. I mean, you come to us, that's one of the things we get often, is people come to us looking for just off the wall ideas, and we make them happen.
All right. So, you know, it's funny because we get the pitch all the time from the big IT brands, you know, this is for creative pros, and I'll say why. And they'll say, well, because it's expensive aluminum case. Well, they don't say it that way, but that's, you know, the intimation sometimes. What is it about the quote creative pro that makes them, and maybe, I don't know, you tell me how your guys are, that makes them love design so much more, or performance, or niche products, or you know, the number of LaCie drives I see at shops like yours with the orange bumpers around them, or whatever. What is it about the creative professional from a technology standpoint that makes you such a unique beast compared to the rest of us common folk?
Well, yeah. I mean, what it comes down to is we have, like, every dollar counts towards how much time we spend on something directly correlates to how much we make in terms of profit. So the less time it takes to do anything, the better off we are. And then reliability is a huge thing. I see those LaCie rugged drives all over the place, and I hate those. They're slow, expensive. I never recommend them to anyone. Like, we don't use those kind of drives anymore, but we used to. I always recommended the Silicon Power A80s. They were like aluminum drives. They cost like $80, $90, 2 terabytes, 1 terabyte, I think. And they're waterproof, they're everything. But I guess to answer your question, it really comes down to, I hate the expression time is money, but it really is. Time is money, but more importantly, the reliability. Because when you are on location with a client, they're paying you a lot of money to be there. The last thing you can have happen is something to fail, or something goes wrong, even worse, when you're shooting a whole day and you have all these cameras going and there's a lot of things happening at once. If you lose any data, it's really, you can't come back from that. So we use things to mitigate that, things like Hedge, you know, which do a checksum to make sure that what you're copying off the card gets on the drive. Doing multiple copies, we use something called SilverStack, which we love, which is basically a DIT. A DIT stands for Digital Imaging Technician, which is a job on set. All they do, it used to be a DIT and a data wrangler, and they all just kind of got rolled up into one job. But their whole job is just to make sure that cards that are handed to them get put onto redundant storage, and that what they're handing back out to the guy shooting are good to white, basically. And that translates, that's that mentality of like, redundancy, speed, things have to happen on time. That goes pretty much across the entire, you know, every part of our business. It has to be done. It's like, has to be done now, mm-hmm. every single time. There's no time to wait.
Well, let's talk about your data flow a little bit then, because you're talking about, you know, video shoot or photo shoot or whatever that's creating, presumably large files, especially. Are you guys shooting some 8K stuff yet?
Yeah, we've been using Reds for a long time. Okay. Right now, any commercial work that we do is on a Red Helium Weapon, which is an 8K camera, which, and you know, it uses a lot of data, but we also use C200s a lot, okay. which when you're shooting on, the Reds have Red Mags, which we have the 512 gigabytes, mm-hmm. and you know, that's about an hour of footage, depending on which compression ratio you're doing. But the C200s and a lot of cameras like it just have like one speed. So if you're recording onto those in 4K RAW, you're still using a ridiculous amount of data. So we'll generally walk out of an 8-hour shoot day with anywhere from 1 to 2 terabytes of data just between our sound recorder. And, you know, we record everything 32-bit with our sound just because it's the most flexible in post. We like flexibility in post, and we shoot everything raw. So okay. it's a lot of just a lot of data coming down.
So you're grabbing that at the source, obviously, with the cameras and then your sound recording equipment. But how much of that on set moves from those devices to something else, a copy or some other more resilient storage?
Sure. So our workflow is pretty simple. Usually we use something like I talked about earlier, like SilverStack, which is a great piece of software. And all it does is it brings in, you put your card in, you can do things called wild cards, which basically, you know, mm-hmm. pre-fill folder data. So you just hit copy and it gets put in the right spot based on the card where you want to put it. And it makes two copies and it uses MD5 checksumming or SHA something, I forget what it is. We use MD5 just because it's proven. And we get minimum of two copies, and then we take that card, set it aside, and that gets put back out to format. And then once we get back, we copy everything over to our shared storage. And then as the project gets loaded and we organize everything every night, it gets offloaded to another server, another NAS. And then that NAS also makes copies onto external hard drives, which then two of those, we follow the 3-2-1 backup principle. So
sure.
Three copies, two different types of medium, one offsite. So yep. When it's done backing up, normally once a week or so, we'll take the drives out because they fill up pretty quick. Label everything. We just use Seagate externals. They're fine for just mm-hmm. taking things offsite. Just those 8 terabyte ones. We've bought so many of those on Amazon. It's ridiculous. Take one of those offsite, load that onto just a regular G-RAID. It's just a 5-drive, you know, Thunderbolt 2 RAID. We have Mac Mini actually at my house that then gets dumped onto LTO. So we
carry
everything on LTO, which was a big investment at the time. You know, when we started out, we had no money. I mean, it was kind of sad. You know, we had like hour long meetings about, should we get this? We were looking at routers, and it was an edge router, light. And it was like, you know, can we afford to spend this money?
I know the conversation well. there's a lot of gear and a lot of stuff to think about in your industry too, because things are moving so fast. The migration to a new camera is not an insignificant expense. Those Reds are, dear Lord, you could get a car for those things, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the stuff that we use, it just has to work. Mm-hmm. It has to work and it has to fit into the whole ecosystem. So when you have something like a Red, it's a small camera relative to something larger like an Arri, Alexa, or you know, Alexa Mini or an Alexa Mini LF, which is like, again, they're small cameras, they're mini of the big ones, but they're still very large. And that has to, you know, go from a tripod to a shoulder mount to, you know, something like a Movi, like a stabilizer. And everything has to happen really quick. You know, we had a shoot 2 years ago where we had to take a Movi, or we had to a sunrise sequence on the farm. It's one of the spots that we have on our work page for RANPAC. Okay. But we had a woman in a field and she was picking strawberries. And then we had to go from a tripod to a dolly, and then from the dolly to a Movi, all in under half an hour, which meant we had about 5 minutes to take the thing off a dolly, get it about 100 yards away, put it onto the Movi, and just like all that stuff just requires a lot of sequencing. That's why all this stuff costs so much. That's really what it comes down to, because you can buy so much amazing equipment now for so cheap. You know, a lot of the consumer stuff out there, I would even say like professional prosumer stuff, is incredible. I mean, you can get a camera for, you can get a whole package, lighting, camera, everything you need for, you know, what it used to cost a fortune. Now anybody can start a video production company. Anybody can make a YouTube channel and make it look really good with, you know, relatively inexpensive hardware. But when you get on the professional level, it's all about speed. So if you have something that doesn't work right, you got 20 people on set looking at you just like, the hell are you guys doing? Like, we
have, isn't it always the worst or the cheapest thing that tends to fail too? I mean, I can't tell you how many SD cards we've had that, you know, you do the recording, then you go to dump it onto your next level of storage and it's, you know, corrupt data or some other crap happened because the card died. I mean, you guys go through a ton more SD and maybe even CF Express now cards than we do, but my gosh, the failure point there is ridiculous. And you're right. I mean, you think about, well, on Amazon, this brand I've never heard of is 4 terabytes and, you know, is $8, or I could pay for, you know, a Samsung or a SanDisk or whatever with a 10-year warranty. You know, a lot of those things are worth paying up for, even if it hurts a little bit on the entry point.
It's always worth you have to look at this stuff as an investment. So if you're, I have a personal friend that's, you know, an amazing photographer, and he buys the cheapest stuff. He did for a very long time. And when I talked to him once, you know, he's a photographer, so he does a lot of strobe work, you know, and he was buying these, basically these strobe, like wireless strobe firing triggers. So he,
okay,
clicks the shutter on his camera and then the strobes fire. And he was telling me about how he had to buy another set. And I was like, how many of these have you had to buy? He's like, oh, you know, over the past 3 years, I've had to buy, you know, 6 sets of them. I'm like, how much are those? He's like, oh, they're about, you know, they're cheap. They're like $75 a set. And I'm like, well, how much is like the good one?
He's like, right,
$400. I can't afford that. I'm like, you've already spent that.
Right.
What are you doing? And he works professionally. But, you know, everybody seems to get locked into this mindset that if you can get away with it and it works for now, then you're good. Save yourself the money. And I agree with that when you're on a budget and you don't have that money to spend. But if you can afford just a little bit more, sometimes it'll last you so much longer. I mean, I have gear that I've been using for 5-6 years that we still use just because it works every time. And that goes from everything from C stands down to lenses. And then you have to sort of balance it out. You know, if you spend a lot of money on the latest camera, generally it's not a good idea to spend $20,000-$30,000 on a camera, because that's going to get out of date usually really quick. But things that are worth spending money on are things like lenses. If you spend a lot of money on a good set of lenses, I mean, they never really go down in value, especially when you're talking about cinema lenses. But yeah.
So it's interesting because, you know, I hear you and I hear others in this industry talking about reliability and investing in something good. But then I go to something like NAB, a trade show made for people of your ilk, and I see in the back corner the storage solutions, and I all sorts of companies I've never even heard of before that are like, oh yeah, we sell into DreamWorks or we sell into, you know, whoever, Pixar, whoever's the hot name of the moment. And it's someone that you've never heard of that has some sort of NAS or filer or whatever. It's a strange sort of, you know, discrepancy to me between, you know, at the front end or some parts of the process where you're like, yeah, let's really get this right. And then you get to the data center and they're like, you know, we're running on some no name hardware software stack where all of our data is centralized. I don't know. It's kind of crazy.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing, especially in this field, there's so many people hawking, you know, solutions for one thing or another. I mean, I was talking about tape drives and, you know, there's a bunch of people that make different tape drives for like Macs. I mean, we're kind of a Mac, Windows. All of our post-production in general, all of our editors are on Windows. And then, you know, we have a designer, he's on a Mac, our count director, he's on a Mac. I'm on a Mac. I'm one of the unfortunate people that got one of the Mac Pros, the 2013 and the 2019. So I don't know where I'm going with that. Just I'm just disappointed.
Just don't buy a Mac when you buy one, evidently.
Yeah, seriously. Just wait till the new M1 Mac Pro, whatever the hell it's going to be. But yeah, I mean, storage is one of those things, and it's confusing when you're talking about people like us. Okay, when you want to know about lighting techniques, what's the best kind of lighting? Like, do we want to get, you know, a 1x1 LED panel, or do we want something with like an umbrella? We can go cheaper with like a Godox or something like that. Or what lenses, what camera, like great software. A lot of people in this field are very strong in those areas. But when you start to go into just storage, you'd be shocked. I mean, there's companies that I've walked into that have in a closet, their backup for, you know, very expensive. Like you're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of projects. And they're on these crappy little, you know, LaCie rugged drives.
I've seen it. Yeah.
I mean, they just have them on shelves. They just don't take it seriously. And it drives me crazy just thinking about what could happen. Cause we often have clients coming to us, you know, a year, 2 years later where they want to make something new, but they want to use footage that we have from a while ago, or they want to build off a project that we had, and being able to pull that and knowing that, okay, maybe these drives, maybe one of them fails, maybe they both fail. At least we have LTO backup. Like we have backups everywhere. We also have cloud backup, but we don't really use that often because I don't know. It's cheaper, it seems like, for us to just store it locally. But the world gets confusing.
It strikes me that that you guys are not unlike physicians. There's so many small physicians and doctors' offices out there where the doctor practitioner is also the IT guy. And it just is one of those things where you may not necessarily be the best guy for the job, but you're the best of what's available to go figure out the problems. And in their case, it's the, you know, the EMR, the electric you know, medical record software. That's the core there in storing, you know, imaging, x-rays, or whatever they do in their offices is the driver of those decisions. In your case, it's not so different. A lot of big files, but, you know, things that you need to be available for forever and ever, as you say, in case a customer or client comes back asking for that. So we talked a little bit about the workflow from the field into the data center. What did you do for your data center? Because you've got all these big files, but I'm getting the sense that dropping Isilon or NetApp kind of figures on a storage solution isn't what was in your realm. What do you guys do when you need to go figure out these bigger problems for your bulk storage?
Yeah, I'll tell you where we started. I guess, okay. Even as recently as 2 years ago, we were running a QNAP NAS. It was a TDS 1282 T3. So it was a Thunderbolt 3.
I knew it.
And it had two 10 gigabit connections on the back. And, you know, at the time we were a little bit smaller. So we had just, you know, two or three people at a time, maybe working off of it, but really just one guy, you know, and this was like 2.5, 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, you know, followed everything they said. They said, oh, this is blazing fast. I watched all the reviews, read everything I could about it. Like, this NAS is good enough for, you know, four editors. And I can tell you right now, not true, not true at all. I mean, that thing just, it's fine. It's fine. It's good raw speed. But when you're talking about things like a timeline in Premiere, or you're working in DaVinci Resolve, which we use DaVinci Resolve and Premiere, mostly DaVinci Resolve now, we're transitioning over because Adobe, Adobe sucks. I mean, let's be real. It's awful software. I mean, they just can't seem to get that optimized at all. But in general, what happens is we would have these situations where your speeds seem to be fine. Then you have two people working off of it, and that seems fine too. Like, it might load a little bit slower, or you might be scrubbing the timeline and drop a few frames. But the problem we really were running into, even with, we, you know, we had a Iron Wolf Pro NAS hard drives in there, which were really cool. You know, these are fast. We had a SSD cache in front of it.
You were doing it all.
We were trying to do everything we could. You know, we had four Samsung 850 Evo, just SSDs in just a RAID 0 with 3 terabytes usable. It was like 3 and some change, but we were just trying to get as much optimization as we could get going. And it worked okay until our project started getting more involved, where we had suddenly two people editing the same set of footage and motion graphics guy working with that footage to do, you know, graphic overlays and trying to do things with motion graphics using the footage that we had within it. And then suddenly you've got errors everywhere. And Premiere has just no end to errors. But one of the errors that we got a lot was it wasn't able to pull the frames from the storage, which we hadn't seen until we started getting like really intense with the projects we were doing. And all came to a head when we had a deadline. We had this one crazy project for a huge client for us, and we had a week to film it and deliver it. And it was the day before, and we were done. We just had to export out a final 4K version for them. And we must have spent 10 hours trying to do that, because it was just error, fail. And we couldn't figure it out. We tried everything. And then it just turned out to, once we pulled it off of the NAS and pulled it onto a local RAID, which took a long time, mind you, then it was fine. And we had that happen with client work 3 times over the past year. And that pushed us to be like, look, we gotta quit messing around with QNAP. I'm sure they do some really good solutions, but that's when I set on the search for something better. And I'm the type of guy, you know, I don't know if you watch the desk review that the desk I'm actually sitting at right now, but the desk review we did for YouTube.
No, I saw a coffee machine though. You did look pretty sweet.
Yeah, the coffee machine is awesome. I highly recommend it.
All right. Just, we'll come back to that. I got a question for you.
We don't get any money for that, but, you know, I'm the type of person, and I'm sure you are too, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners are too, where you get steeped in this world and you're just constantly looking for every angle to a solution. You want to know what people think. What are the stats? What else is out there? What options do I have? What price points can I get? Like, how cheap can I get it for what we need? Where do I need to spend a little bit of extra money to get something better? And when it comes to servers and NASs, you know, I called so many different places. I built so many quotes out, and nobody seemed to care what we were using it for. They just wanted to know how they could sell it to us as quick as possible. And
I think you're right. And it goes back to something I said at the beginning, is that we hear all the time from the IT shops that it's good for use case X. And then, you know, we'll kind of probe in, well, what does that mean? Or what's the backup for that, right? So if you're out there talking to someone about storage, they might put together a super micro server for you and, you know, a Windows share and a bunch of hard drives and flash, and they'll say it'll be great, because they're just looking at some IOPS number or some core count or, you know, some stat, right? That's that seems relevant at the time, but without the context of what you're doing and what your application needs are, doesn't really solve the problem for you. But anyway, so you were going through that process.
No, but you're right, because IOPS is very important for us, especially when you have a timeline and you have, say you've got a timeline with 30 clips on it and they're all, you know, 8K red, you got some 4K C200, what have you, and you've got effects and things going on. Scrubbing through that timeline, you need to be able to have stuff load instantly. And IOPS really helps with that sort of random read, especially with, you know, something over, I guess I should start with, our network is not the best, but good for our use case. We use a XG or a 16XG, the UniFi 16XG 10 gigabit switch. We ran all our own Cat 6A cabling, and you know, everybody here is connected with a 10 gig. And you know, when you're doing something over the network, I think that's where Premier really struggled, was calling for that information off that QNAP. It's like something was happening. I don't know what it was, but something was happening and it was making it just air out constantly. It was the most aggravating thing, especially when you just want to go home, you know, it's 6:30 at night. You just want to go home. You just want to like click render and you go home and you're done. But it was like a constant source of anxiety. And,
I do want to ask you too, before you get too far away from it, when you're talking about scrubbing that timeline and getting that random access, that's the one that I think gets missed a lot, because when we think about a use case like yours, it's really easy to think about, okay, well, I've got big video file from camera to some secondary device to a NAS, like moving around big files. So as long as I can do really well in large block sequential read write, then I'm good to go. But you may have a combination of somebody interacting with your storage in that way, copying a file over or pulling one off while someone else is scrubbing the timeline. So now you've got a really interesting mix of small block and large block hitting that thing. And that's probably where they struggle a little bit if they're not properly scoped.
Yeah. And that's most of the time with these NAS, like Synology or QNAP or what have you. It's when you're as somebody that works in video, you see that it does 2 gigabytes per second read and like 1500 write, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, great. I don't use anywhere near that. But as soon as you start adding people to that, that's when it falls apart and you end up in a situation where you're getting errors or things are loading slow. And I could tell you, I don't know if you want to get into the what we're using right now yet, but
yeah.
We ended up, so in my journey to find a solution, again, I spent a lot of time looking, researching, finding everything that I could. A lot of it's new information to me. You know, when you're getting into, you know, the server world, I'm sure you know much better than I do. I'm positive of that. It's really complicated really quickly when you get into every vendor's different solution for one thing or another, whether it's, you know, how you connect to it, how you configure it, what OS it's running, whatever. And like QNAP and Synology is great because it's just, you know, it's plug and play. You just kind of.
Sure. Well, the simplicity is the big selling point for both of those guys, right?
Right. And it's a turnkey solution. You don't really have to worry about it. And for me, you know, being the guy that's managing the IT here, I wanted something very simple as well. And, you know, I kept asking questions to people, calling people. And finally I found something that I thought was going to work. It was, I don't remember the company, but it was a Supermicro server with NVMe storage and had like 12 terabytes of NVMe storage. And I was like, okay,
nice.
This will get us going, right? Like this will be good. Sure. And everybody on Reddit basically ripped me apart. They're like, this is not good. Like this is what you want.
Wait, which Reddit? Because some of them are more violent than others.
I think it was Data Hoarders, if I remember.
Okay. Well, Data Hoarders is not a bad place to start. We spend a lot of time there. We've got our own, actually. We just, if I'll plug my own subreddit, we just passed up over 4,100 on ours. So we're cruising along there. I mean, like you said before, you're always looking for new angles. We ditched the forums entirely that we used to have. That was the thing of the early 2000s, every tech site with their own forums. And we said, you know what? let's just go to where the people are, whether it's a social channel or Reddit. So we set up there. But you're right. There's a ton of people on Data Hoarder and Home Lab and Storage and a couple others that are just like you, kind of stuck with this problem. But before I just to pause you in your journey, mm-hmm. why not just flip open the phone book in Cleveland and find a local service provider? There must be dozens that would have been able to put together a storage compute solution for you.
There were, but we are at our core a DIY company. Like okay. everything that we do, from our studio to how we approach jobs, anything that we can do ourselves, that's what we like. And you know, I could tell you when we were looking for a solution, because we needed something, but this was about 6 months ago. And, you know, COVID kind of made the world a little uncertain in a lot of ways.
Yes.
So that's like the message everywhere now. But for us, it was especially true. Like things were going better than we expected. But, you know, an MSP or, you know, an IT company, we just, there was a lot of expense involved in that we didn't want to. Mm-hmm. It's stretched out. It's kind of like when you do a lease and they amortize additions to anything or like renovations. You know, we were offered that at our current place right now. We just decided to do all the work ourselves.
And okay.
It's kind of how we are. You know, we're sort of just, I don't know. Everybody here is really into what we do. So if that's from painting a room or putting down, you know, plank flooring, vinyl plank flooring, all the way to coming up with a concept and executing something for, you know, a project that's in six figures. It doesn't matter. It's just all, we just love what we do. And that extends everywhere. I mean, everybody here is like that. And so when it came time to finding a solution for storage, we just wanted to see what could we find that was going to be something we could wrap our brains around. You know,
so you went on Reddit and got laughed at.
I wouldn't say laughed at, but people in general, they're very nice on Data Hoarders. Home Lab. I love Home Lab. Our networking is great too. I think I cross posted to a few different places, but basically a lot of people are like, you don't seem to know what you want, because originally, and I'll give them the benefit here, because I was like, so I'm going to do this super micro server. And I was thinking about Unraid, and that's what I was thinking about doing for this. And people were just like, no, don't do that. Like if you're going to run a Plex server, sure, Unraid's great. But if you want to do something serious, you need ZFS, like especially with our use case when we're, because video is one of those things, you know, recovering. We've had situations where we copied a file over without using any kind of checksumming, which is very important mm-hmm. for transferring those large, you know, large file sizes where every bit matters. And the way the Red records, it does it in a 4 gigabyte chunks to sort of like spread out the risk. At least that's what I'm guessing. You know, I don't want to get into the ethics of Red Digital, but that's how they have their setup. And we were just missing one file off of the server. This was like a year ago. We were missing the end of the clip, and it was the point that we needed.
It's always the one you need.
Yeah, it was the exact point that we needed that shot. And luckily we had it. It just didn't copy over right. And so when you have, you know, terabytes and terabytes of data on a server, if you lose any of that, you might as well just throw out the whole clip, because you're missing, it takes with it quite a bit of information, especially when you're dealing with raw codecs like Red Code or Canon RAW Lite, something like that. Like it's just, you got to mitigate the risks anywhere you can. And so ZFS seemed like a good solution. But yeah, so I went to Reddit. Somebody mentioned this company, IX Systems, which I had never heard of. And I called them up blindly. And I won't mention the guy's name, but he was somebody high up at IX, I guess. And I just called him up. I called them blindly because I filled out like the form they have on the website, and I called them because I just wanted to talk and, you know, see what the experience was like. And the guy talked for me for 2 hours, just about life, IX, company philosophy, our company, everything. And that's kind of the experience I got with them, was that they never, like every other company I called, I mean, I was looking for something because I wanted to play around with virtualization, like with Proxmox or something like that, because we do some things that would benefit from that. And this was just a couple weeks ago, and I asked the guy for a quote for, you know, it was like $2,500 for this refurbished machine. And the guy still hasn't called me back. I mean, mm-hmm. I've left him a couple emails, and it's just like, do you not want to make money? And IX was like the opposite experience. Like they cared more about what we were interested in, how they could help us. I mean, they spent so much time with us on the phone. I mean, I can talk a lot.
Well, I mean, they're solid, and we did a live stream with them not long ago, looking at the new TrueNAS platform. I think it was the first live stream I think that we did was on the launch of TrueNAS and the first demo that they had done publicly. So, yeah, I mean, it's a good outfit, and people have been on FreeNAS for ages, and that's one of Reddit's favorite recommendations. So. FreeNAS, which is now become TrueNAS. But so what'd you do? Did you bundle it with your own hardware? Did you pick one of their pre-assembled solutions? Where'd you go from there?
Yeah, so the guy there, Charles, I don't know if you know Charles, I think it's Matt New. You can cut mm-hmm. that out if you need to. I don't know.
Nah, carry on. Call Charles if you want a good deal, evidently.
Charles is great. And he walked me through everything. And at the time they were running a quarterly special. And I'm really wary of any time a company's trying to sell me on a special. I'm like, okay.
Especially at the end of the quarter, right?
Yeah. Like you're trying to clear out some inventory or it's an artificial deal. We run into that a lot with our business. Like you'll get this big, expensive, you know, $6,000 piece of equipment. And they're like, yeah, we're running a it's on sale right now. And it's like, okay, well, if I go to Amazon, it's the same price. So I don't know what your sale price is, but it seems to be the exact same as everyone else. But we ended up going with the M40 H-HA, which is the high availability version of the M40. And we went all solid state. So we got 1.92 terabyte Micron, I think it was. Micron read intensive enterprise storage drives.
Okay.
And the way they set that up for us was based off of how we use it. It comes with two. I mean, it's a really cool device because it's got two motherboards, two CPUs. It's all redundant. It's got
two controllers, right?
Two controllers. Yep.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they sent us out the hardware to basically split out the 40 gigabit NIC into four different 10 gigabit fiber connections to our switch so that we could actually use it, which I looked at every type of switch. I don't know if you have recommendations for switches that do this kind of stuff, but like I couldn't find a straight answer. And we use a lot of UniFi switching equipment. So it's like something that's easy to understand from my perspective. And once you get into
Oh gosh, switching can be such a networking. It's always, if there's ever a problem in our lab, it's always networking, and we're admittedly not networking pros. In fact, we run on mostly Dell EMC switches for the Ethernet side, and they gave us one or two of them for some project. Anyway, they happen to have pro support with them. So Kevin, who runs our lab, you know, started to get set up and realized, oh my gosh, these things have pro support contracts. So he called in. He spent probably 14 hours on the phone over two or three days with those guys, and they were phenomenal about how to set it up and tweak it. Now those things are really expensive, but if you want to be disruptive in IT, it seems like continuing to ease the pain that small businesses go through on the networking side of the house would be a great starting point. And Ubiquiti's done a pretty good job there. We've got some of their gear here in the office, but it's not always perfect, and getting support there can be challenging.
Impossible, I would say. Impossible. I mean, okay. Luckily,
I was going to be nicer, but yeah.
I mean, I've just you know, I love Ubiquiti stuff. You know, the UniFi stuff is great. I just wish they would, you know, figure out a network, like a router or security appliance that wasn't just hampered in every possible way. I mean, I don't know. I've looked into those too, but yeah, when it comes down to it, you know, what I've noticed is that we, as soon as we put that M40 in, it changed
right.
how we work. And I know that seems like an exaggeration, but it changed how we work across the board, because we went from, and we've tested this thing a lot, because we're actually doing a testimonial video for them. We're also doing a review for ourselves of just what it is, because, you know, when you get into our field, most of the people, you know, they get something that just sits on their desk and they're the only person touching that footage. And if somebody else needs to work on it, they copy it to a drive. And mm-hmm. it's one of those things where people in this field generally don't really care how fast it is, as long as it works. You know, they don't notice the render time slowing down. They don't notice choppy frames. It's sort of one of those weird things until you get to a certain level. And I'm not saying that's true across the board, but when you get to a certain level and you have a client sitting in the room and they're watching a big screen, you can't be dropping frames. You can't be waiting forever for something to render, whatever it is.
It's like losing your eyesight. One day you realize you can't read the receipt right. when you leave the restaurant.
Right. Yeah. You just don't know what it is.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I was looking at the edit bay that you've got set up with the recliners in your office. And I was thinking about that guy that's sitting at that display with four or five or however many customers in that array behind them. And man, that can be nerve wracking time. And if your thing, you know, if you're not scrolling and looking good and clean, that's a bit of an eyesore just from your outward positioning to your customers or your clients, I would think. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a big deal, especially you don't want to have to sit there and explain something to a client when you don't want to be operating on a computer that's not dropping frames, but say you've got like a 1/8 or 1/16 proxy up on the display and they're like, why is it so fuzzy? And you're like, well,
it won't be, or, you know,
yeah, you're like, it's not that way. Let me show you. But the whole, it's like, it's across the board. That's on set, in post, whatever it is. In general though, it is few things that you can have sort of bottlenecking your process, the better. And for us, you know, we have really high end workstations. We have a really solid, fast network. Everything's good. Then the storage was always the problem. And this thing, you know, it's the first time I've actually used something in sort of the IT world that really like blew me away, because we did a test after the first couple days that we got it, and they helped us set everything up, which was really nice. And they were great about that. But we tried doing like just pushing it as far as we could. And, you know, this thing is a couple years old, so it's marked down from what it originally sold for originally, but it's a couple years old, but we were still getting 3 gigabytes per second in and out, just pushing it as hard as we could. And that's the difference between you walking in with a card or a drive to copy and telling somebody that's working on something for a client, can you stop what you're doing? Because I need to copy something to the server. That's how it used to be. Now
that's brutal.
It's really brutal, especially when you have like, you know, these red mags and these CFast cards. They can easily hit 500-550 megs a second. And when you have two of those going and you're saturating your 10 gig connection, I mean, that can hammer a lot of servers, especially when you're trying to stream and data off that server, or I guess NAS. And with this thing, it's like it just doesn't care. It just doesn't notice. Like, you can have as many people as we need on it. I mean, we have generally 4 to 5 people using it at any given time. And nothing slows down. And I can't tell you like how amazing that is just to experience. It's so incredible. It just doesn't seem to care.
Yeah, and there's even more upside available, I suppose, if you guys were to, you know, double up or triple up the number of people you had. There's more capabilities out there. So who noticed it first? I mean, you were working on the deployment, so you knew it was happening. Who felt it first when your storage issues got streamlined or unscrewed, I suppose, compared to where you were?
Everybody all at once. I know that sounds crazy, but all the editors noticed.
So they all roll in at whatever time and start their daily tasks. And
well, no, they knew it was coming in because we shot a whole unboxing part of it for the, like, we all knew. Because for us, you know, it was a big purchase because it was really between that sort of a much cheaper purchase. And we were also looking at a Jellyfish, which I really didn't want to get because for the same price, you were getting Spinning Rust.
Sure.
This one, it's a lot less. The usable storage is like 30 terabytes, but it's all very fast SSDs. And the way they set it up was for VDEVs. So RAID Z2s, four of those. So it was five per set. And we just set up one share. You know, we called the server Kronos because that was we just got into this Greek mythology thing. I don't know why.
Sure.
He was the Titan of time, I guess.
All right. Like the god. Sounds about right then.
Yeah, which for editing, that seemed really appropriate for us. And our old one was called Atlas because for us, it was holding up our world. That was the QNAP. And now it just functions as a, you know, backup server. But what we ended up seeing was, you know, as soon as those guys got things sort of laid out, we were opening up projects between DaVinci Resolve and Premiere, After Effects, and it was just all of a sudden like the sun came shining in because there was no hiccup anywhere. Everything was working. Everything was crazy fast. You could scrub, you know, I don't know how many people get to experience this much with like 8K footage, but scrubbing through the timeline, it was actually keeping up. Every single frame was right there. You know, if you watch something like Linus Tech Tips, you know, you see that where they're testing out, you know, 24 NVMe drives and this crazy server they got that's amazing. And like, we were getting that same performance and just raw 8K footage, raw 4K footage. Still struggles with, I think just in Premiere in general, the more compressed your footage is, the more difficult it is for your NLE to actually handle that on a timeline. So Redcode is actually surprisingly fast for what it is, especially when you're dealing with those kind of resolutions. But yeah, no, I got a little bit off track there, but everybody knows.
No, well, I mean, but you're living it. And I think that the stuff that you're talking about is really important. And it's one of the things that when we're looking at these solutions, whether it's, you know, TrueNAS or whether it's a Synology or QNAP or even a lower end NetApp or Dell EMC array or whatever, you got to ask the question, what's the target? What's the objective? And does this thing meet those needs? And sometimes we get, you know, kind of sucked into our own world as you, probably you do as creatives, where you're like, you live in this world and you start to get a little bit too tunnel vision. So these conversations are great to, I think, to help not only push us in the way we think about these devices to ask the questions of IT vendors about what are you doing here? Why does this matter? And how is this going to help the creative field? But for those listening too, that are going through similar journey, that might be posting to Data Hoarder to help figure out how to solve their image storage problem or whatever it is. You know, there's a lot of good institutional knowledge out there. And, you know, we hope just to keep helping provide some of that information. And, you know, like I said, really appreciate these conversations and hearing the stories about what you're going through with the agency. A couple of weeks ago, I was talking with the guys at Roblox and they had a totally different problem with technology that in their case, containers saved their butt. In your case, it's a more traditional hardware infrastructure with things like Flash. And I think that even that is an interesting angle because a lot of people would say, okay, well, if you're reading and writing these big bulky files, you know, do you really need Flash? And you know, your answer clearly is yes. And with the multi-tenancy and with the resolution you need on those timelines, it makes a world of difference.
Yeah, I mean, it's I would say Flash, you know, it seems really expensive, and for a while it was just not a consideration for us because if it works, it works. But Flash, you know, I'm really excited to see what happens with NVMe in this kind of footprint. If it in a couple of years gets to this kind of price point where it's actually affordable to get, you know, mass storage that's NVMe based. I know there's a lot of issues on the on just the hardware side and just fully utilizing.
Wait till you get to NVMe over Fabrics. You're gonna love it. We're gonna have to fix the networking up, but yeah, you guys will love that, because then, well, you're talking about some direct access to the flash. That's really cool for your crew. They'll dig that one for sure one day.
I mean, anything you can throw at us, the faster the better. I mean, it's just always good. And we actually, you know, I just want to touch real quick on ZFS. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't know what ZFS really was. I'd heard about it because I watch a lot of like Level One Techs, Serve the Home, Storage mm-hmm. Reviews. I watch a lot.
Patrick, that son of a. Anyway,
he's good.
He's a friend. We like Patrick.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I love watching like these kind of channels because you guys really know what's going on, and it, mm-hmm. I love YouTube as a medium for that because you're kind of required to explain it in a way that somebody like me can understand. Where I don't have to have certifications to mm-hmm. be able to understand what's happening and sort of how it fits into the world. And a lot of the stuff, like if it's enterprise level, I'm not going to see that for a while. But some things that really affect what we do, like ZFS, you know, I didn't know much about replication and whatever. And we're actually getting one of the iX TrueNAS Mini XL Pluses to sit and just be a backup server, and just knowing that how replication works and how it's going to be copying everything incrementally. And we'll just have that sort of sitting there, just that reassurance, because copying things, you know, even when you have like a QNAP, if you're copying something to an external drive, it's like, there's no verification at all. So we have to do all that just manually, just by, you know, checking things, making sure that we have all the data that we need. And we do actually use containers. I don't know to the
extent. Oh my God.
It's something that we've been breaking into recently, because we have to run, like for example, one of the things we have to run is a PostgreSQL. I don't know if I'm saying that right.
Postgres,
but we run, we actually run a Docker container for that. So that database for DaVinci Resolve, so that we can collaborate on that software across our network. So you can have people working in the same project, which it's amazing, by the way. DaVinci Resolve is just so far ahead of where the Adobe ecosystem is. It's insane. I mean, you can have five people working on one project all at the same time, two people cutting, two people coloring, two people doing audio all at the same time. And yeah, that's one area that we've been experimenting in, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that the challenge that ZFS has had historically is that it's been sort of Linux nerddom kind of arena, and people will see that and they'll be like, that's for CLI guys. That's too confusing. It's too hard. It's too complicated. But those guys that have been at it working with ZFS for all that time have known the dirty little secret that the data integrity of ZFS is really pretty strong. And I think iX and the rebranding of FreeNAS to TrueNAS will make a world of difference to bring that to more people, because, you know, the name FreeNAS, it never really sounded enterprise. It didn't sound grown up, and so now, you know, with the rebranding, we'll see an increase in adoption outside of just the hardcore storage admins that always knew that ZFS was solid for that, but now taking it with a UI and some manageability to shops like yours, that where it's easy to, I don't know if you timed it, but it probably didn't take long from when you were set up and online to create the first volume and share it out with, you know, your team. So, you know, being able to make that stuff easy with the underpinnings is a pretty strong offering.
Yeah, I mean, the UI is, I would say the UI is still kind of like pushing it for most people like us, where there's a lot of things in there that are very powerful,
There are a lot of knobs and dials. That's the one place where you have to be a little careful, right?
But it is very cool. And we were up and running so fast. I mean, we just popped the drives in. We had to schedule a time for them to install everything or like get everything configured. But I mean, God, those guys just through TeamViewer, just through the CLI, just, you know, typing away commands. And I actually had to ask them a few because there were some cool things they did from like a stats standpoint of like checking things out with like the pool. And I've never seen people type that fast in front of me before. Like it was like being in the Matrix, kind of, I guess. That's a bad example, but it was so many.
It feels like it sometimes, though.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's like, that's, you know, your world, your guys' world. You know, we're very much point and click and you know, keyboard hotkeys and that kind of thing. But you know, the setup of it was so fast, and it's just kind of set it and forget it. Like, I know I like being able to monitor everything, but it just works. I mean, you know, I can't express how important that is. If you have, I've always heard, I don't know if this is something that's like a networking thing, but if you have a piece of networking equipment that you forget that you own, then it's doing its job. That's kind of how I feel about this thing. Whereas like the QNAP one, it was just constantly checking like, why is this not working? Why is this messing up? And you know, the TrueNAS, it just does everything so seamlessly for us. It's great.
Well, we started and wanted to have a conversation about technology in a creative shop, and ended up with your love fest for your TrueNAS. But that's okay, because you know, a lot of people buy tech and they don't always love it. So to have something that you guys really love that's working for you is a great story, and I think should be encouraging to others. And you know, if someone wants to learn more, they can just call up IX. Who do we ask for? Charlie? Is that who they?
Charles, Matt now. I think it's
all right. So just call up. Don't worry about filling out forms. That takes too long. Just hit the phone number, and if not, I'll give you Chris's number. He's in Knoxville. I think he'll I'll give you a cell number if you need somebody. But no, this is a great conversation, Andrew. Really appreciate it. And next time I get up your way, I expect a full tour of the shop.
Yeah, please do. Cleveland is always open, even if you're from Cincinnati or Columbus. Not Toledo, though.
No. What about Pittsburgh?
Oh, absolutely. My whole family's from Pittsburgh.
Oh gosh, this is getting worse by the moment. All right, I'm out of here. We got to wrap this thing up. Thanks for helping out and doing the pod today.
Thanks for having me.
The conversation.
Appreciate it. Thank you.